Irish. This is a good time to record.
Irish witch wash.
Irish witch wash.
Hello there.
Irish witch watch would be a good podcast for Irish witches.
Yes,
and
there we go.
I'll be learning about the Celtic lore.
And with that, oh my gosh. And with that, welcome to Life's a Witch.
And so are you.
And so are you. I don't know if I have that part in the thing, but yeah. No, okay. I guess, is it Life's a Witch and so are you?
I hope.
I believe that's what we settled on.
I mean, it could just be Life's a Witch.
Life's a Witch.
And, the assumed so are you.
Maybe that's what it is. And then it's live. Well, it's not. I was going to say live at the Old World Emporium.
Oh, yeah.
Live at the Old World Emporium. Except pre-recorded at the Old World Emporium.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. So here are your ghost host guests. I am Mystic Dylan. I am co-owner of the Old World Emporium, as well as a professional witch and a published author. And I have my other co-host of the Old World Emporium.
Hello, Brianne Kelly.
Also, are you saying hello to Brianne Kelly?
Of course. I'm the most important person in the room.
Okay.
yes, Brianne Kelly, also the co-owner of the Old World Emporium. And I am just starting this journey, and I hope you will join along with me as we both learn lots of good and interesting things.
And our third host...
Hi, I'm Ivy Hedge. I am a reader here at the Old World Emporium, and you can also catch me on Insta at Neat Sword.
So I'm going to be honest. When we did our live, Ivy, I could have sworn you said you can catch me. I can't even talk. I could have sworn you said that your Insta was Meat Sword.
I realize how close those are, and it is not Meat Sword. As much as I would love that penile reference, it's not. It is Neat Sword.
So. Okay, Neat Sword. and this is our first episode. The sound may be a little funky, so bear with us because we don't have a proper mic, but I'm going to Amazon Prime one ASAP.
And we're getting set up.
And we're going to get set up. We're getting set up. We'll have intro music. We'll have, you know, some snaggy woof woof. I don't know. I don't know what that is either.
Intro music. Snaggy woof woof.
Snaggy woof woof.
I'm also Amazon Priming my podcast voice.
Oh, yes.
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 Oh, okay.
So next episode, we should be ready.
Yeah. Awesome. So are you looking for like a lower register or
I
like...
I think a little more baritone.
Okay.
A little more baritone. I like that.
A little softer and gentler.
You're sort of going for like nighttime jazz host.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, sax is always sexy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really the slogan for this podcast.
Yes.
Sax is also sexy, always sexy. Yes. So we're going to start out with a few questions. And hopefully this turns out really well because it is being recorded on an iPhone.
With no preparation.
With no preparation. Yeah. So either y'all will absolutely love it and want more, or we will lose followers.
I don't think we can lose from zero.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Well, negative one.
Can you imagine people like start to try to figure out how to unfollow the podcast without following at all? They're like, we need them to take a hit.
Whoa.
Oh my God, this cold room just got hot all of a sudden. Okay, so questions.
Let's do an intro.
Okay.
What do you mean?
Let's have you talk about your experience and what makes Dylan Mystic Dylan.
Ooh. So I guess we'll just talk about our journeys. So I guess I'll start. It all started when I was 9 years old. I mean, it did. Yeah. It literally did.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a shop on Melrose here in Los Angeles called the Bodie Tree. And I lived right around the corner from it. My mom took me in, and she used to look for like aromatherapy oils and crystals and self-help books. And it was a really, really cool shop. And I used to peruse and I loved tarot decks, and I used to kind of just stay in that shop and chill there. And there was a woman who worked at the shop. She was from Sri Lanka. She taught me palmistry, and she was very friendly. And I would just like go there and sit in the back and read books. Then I went to another shop called Panpipes, and I met this amazing woman named Vicky. She was making candles, and I was like, holy shit, there's a real professional witch. Like, this is a thing. And then I think that piqued my interest in the occult and tarot and doing witchcraft. So I always had it as a spiritual practice. I would say I never thought that it was going to be my profession until much later. Mm-hmm. So I pursued different avenues such as theater. I worked at Disney World and things like that. And I would always do tarot as like a side hustle or a hobby. And then I think, you know, eventually I ended up working in shops as a reader. I always had an attraction to magic and witchcraft. So I started making candles at different shops. And then, you know, I was part of different covens. I essentially started my own coven at a shop. And COVID hit. And one day, Brianne picked me up. We thought we were going to go to lunch, and or she thought she was going to go to lunch. She thought it was just going to be a cute little lunch. I jumped in her car and I said, let's open up our own shop. And here we are, the Old World Emporium, where we sell books and crystals, and we have an apothecary. And I think, you know, Brianna is very thankful, and she lets me kind of put a lot of that nostalgia that I received and what helped me into this shop. So that's kind of like where I am. And I would go on to Brianna. What about you?
Well, I've always had an interest in the occult, and just looking at coffee table books that I found at an awesome store in North Hollywood, and they just had so many books, and I was really drawn to Crowley, and I had no idea why. And my friends are asking, why are you reading these books? These are weird. But I found comfort in the books and learning about different things, and I always felt welcome in that store. I felt like it was a place where I could be myself, because they had so many different books from all over the world. They had art, candles, tarot decks, pops, I mean, you name it, vinyl figures, stickers, and I was just really taken back and how comfortable I felt that there was something for everyone there. And I kind of just got lost, and I thought one day I would really like to open up a store like that. And I kind of just put that on the back burner. And I went many different directions in my life. And however, the most recent one, I did join the military because I wanted security and benefits. And I'm a natural rule follower. You know, but I don't follow in my head. I keep that part secret. And then I did get diagnosed with the disqualifying condition. So I had to, get out and medically retire. And I was going to go back to school and plan on opening a store. And that's when Dylan jumped in my car, kicked me in the ass and said, let's do it. And which is completely opposite than how I work, where I like to plan and prepare and make sure all my T's are crossed and my I's are dotted. But I can't thank him enough for doing that, because when I look around at our store, I look and see how much we've accomplished and how much we've done in such a short period of time. And I'm so happy that he and I have been able to kind of just blend our ideas together and our passions and make that home that he had growing up in the store that he loved and also the store that I loved. And
9 minutes in and I'm gonna cry, girl.
Aww. Aww. That's so sweet.
Okay, Ivy.
Hi. So I gained an interest in the occult as a child. I think it was around middle school where I started to really have a lot of interest in learning how to read cards. I had that whole idea that you couldn't buy yourself your own tarot deck, and also my dad was Catholic, and I didn't want to super also bring one into the house, so I taught myself on a regular playing card deck, and then eventually went to this used bookstore where I found my first Rider-Waite tarot deck that absolutely made me hate tarot. and I stopped for such a long time until I eventually bought another tarot deck. But I've always thought any sort of shop, like, I mean, this is kind of outside of shops that I've seen in the past, but shops in general have always been for me a place of this intense aesthetic bliss, which is something that I really enjoy. I think everyone has their different moments of aesthetic bliss. It's kind of what draws us to what we're most passionate about. I sort of refound that when I was like 20 and working at the mall, and this rock shop opened up downstairs from the Lush that I worked at. And that's when I started getting into pendulums, which brought me back around to tarot. I would do readings in the back for coffee for my coworkers, and then eventually started doing readings for friends on Insta and stuff to make a quick buck. And it was really, really lovely to be introduced to you guys into a setting where I realized, like, oh, I can actually do this professionally and not for like $15 on Instagram for obscenely long readings for $15. Oh my gosh. but it's always been something that's just drawn me. It's made me feel the sense of a traveling home, you know. That's always how divination has felt for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what's interesting is that after hearing everyone, it's weird to think that, you know, intuitively, like, we did this podcast, like, initially I was like, oh, Mystic Dylan's podcast. But then I was like, no, let's do it through the store. Mm-hmm. But now, without even being probed, it's almost like all of our experiences started with a shop, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
We found these things through a shop, which, I mean, you know, makes sense. I mean, I know a lot of clients who have had their first taste in witchcraft by having something gifted to them. So whether that be a crystal or a symbol that they like, or like a tarot deck. It's interesting seeing that, like, we've all had this shop. So, right. Or this shop, focus of finding something through a tangible object or a shop. But I would say that, you know, even though this podcast is titled, Life's a Witch, and so are you, I think, tentatively. Yeah. I'm not sure if the so are you is in there. I have to go back and check. I think
maybe
it is.
Maybe it's in parentheses.
Maybe it's in parentheses.
Maybe the parentheses are in my heart.
Maybe. But I do want to say that this podcast is not just for people who claim to be witches or have to take on the mantle of being a witch. It's really just people who are interested in the occult and magic and on a spiritual level. And we are going to have guests that range from different
backgrounds
mm-hmm. And traditions. And the other thing too is that, you know, in this time, one of the things that I will say, and I guess this is a question for me too, it's like, okay, knowing that witchcraft is on the fringe and there's so many misconceptions about it, mm-hmm. and there's so much fear based in divination, people right. thinking that divination is consulting the devil or things like that. How do you feel? I mean, well, how do you feel, Brianne? Like, did you have any, like, you said that your friends would think that that's weird or stuff like that? Like, was there any stigma? Is it something that deterred you at all? Like, or when was the moment where you're like, you know what? This is going to be my practice.
I don't think I had a moment. I think I just kind of dove headfirst.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like it wasn't an epiphany whatsoever. It was just kind of, I'm going in headfirst and I'm going to learn everything I can. And I think finding a group of people, or just a handful of people that felt that same way or that were willing to meet me on my journey and put up with the million and one questions that I had and support me, I think that's kind of what propelled me forward going into kind of the occult or witchcraft path. Growing up, though, I was not raised in a religious family. We did not go to church very often. I did for a short period of time, but it was an open and affirming church. It was non-denominational, so I don't even know if that's a kind of church, but
yeah
there was, we were taught like the Bible was just good stories with lessons that you can apply to life. But
right.
So I came from a background of questioning and science, and there's a reason why everything happens that could be explained in a book.
Do you feel that you have to, because I mean, just knowing you as a mm-hmm. person, you are very like for you to say that you follow the rules. I'm like, yes, but is it hard for you? I mean, because you and I have had discussions mm-hmm. about Christianity and Catholicism, Judeo-Christian, all these things. But I think on the witchcraft level, like, is that what makes it easier to dispel your belief in regards to the lore and folklore that – because witchcraft has some pretty funky folklore,
mm-hmm.
you know? Do you use that more as an archetype and symbolism, or how
– Yes.
How, okay.
More is the archetype mm-hmm. and symbolism as a way that I can apply what I'm learning in everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
And it is kind of nice to also find a group of friends and a community that does like to support each other mm-hmm. when you are unique and you are different. And I always have liked that about this community, is that it is open and affirming in a sense, just like the kind of church that I grew up with, where it doesn't matter if you're short, tall, fat, skinny, or purple, you belong. And that's what I like, that
yeah.
it's not so rigid, and that you're able to ask questions, you're able to explore, and what my favorite thing that you always say is, you know, witchcraft is messy.
Wait, that's your favorite thing that I say? Because
I think
I'm
maybe it's the thing that I remember most.
Because how often do we clean Fortuna, like Fortuna's
okay,
altar?
Wait a second. As far as we're not talking about cleaning.
Okay.
I'm just talking about the practice.
Yes.
The practice.
Yes.
When I hear messy, yes, that incense dust is killing me. However, I think it's messy in a sense that you can be creative. You can flex all your different kinds of muscles
it's
with
true.
Witchcraft.
And you don't need that control. And I'll get to you in a minute, Ivy, because I want to hear about your Catholic background. Because I think one of the things that I resonate with mm-hmm. you that makes mm-hmm. sense is that, like, I think for me, witchcraft was a given because I was also brought up with these Bible stories are just stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, my grandparents, like my grandfather, he had a book of classical mythology, the Quran, the Iliad, mm-hmm. the Bible. So we had a vast different, like, I wasn't grown up with one specific, you have to believe in this. My grandmother on my father's side, and my father is Catholic, mm-hmm. but not devout in any sense.
Right.
And I also grew up a lot of time, like part of my childhood was in Miami. So there was a lot of like folk magic and Santeria mm-hmm. that I was introduced to. But what about you, Ivy?
Growing up Catholic, I mean, I joke that our family, we were bad Catholics. And that's Catholics who skip church sometimes and like don't go 3 times a week. which is a ridiculous amount of time to go to church. Just sorry other people who've grown up Catholic. That's a lot of times to go to church in a week. But I went from Catholicism, which as a kid, I hated it. I mean, it's standing up and down and you listen to the most boring person in the world ramble for a while, you know, and it's not a lot of stuff that you really understand unless you're also part of like the Sunday school groups and you're trying to get to that point where you can eat some of that flesh and body.
is that the cookies?
Yes, the cookies.
The cookies.
Jesus jerky?
The Jesus jerky. Yes, that's right. A little sip of Christ and a little bite. Catholics are...
Is that bad?
I don't know.
I think it's
I'm here. I'm okay. here for it.
Okay, you know
I mean, we may have negative 100 followers now, but I'm here for
Catholics
it.
Catholics have done quite a bit of colonization. I'm sure it's okay to accuse them of the cannibalization that is part of the religion.
Yes. And also, I mean, if you think of that, think Bacchus, Bacchanal.
Exactly.
They did the same thing. Eucharist.
It's not unusual.
Isn't it eating and God?
The practice,
I think it's,
the practice itself is not bad. I just think it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
It's
magic.
It's just, it's there, it's what it is. It's part of a practice. But we went pretty frequently. It was intense. My dad was definitely more emotionally invested in it than I would say my mother was, who eventually moved us to a Baptist church.
How was that?
Well, being Baptist and being LGBT is not a cool combo, and your best friend at the time being Jewish.
I thought you were going to say being Jesus.
Jesus was Jewish.
Well, that's true.
While you're Baptist isn't cool. I would do passion plays with my mom. We would do makeup, and I have the memory that I had. This was after I got really into being Baptist, because I got into being Baptist because it was fun. We were singing, we were having a good time. It was energy that the Catholic Church didn't have. And this is also what I think can be, again, not that being Baptist is bad, but this particular church I went to, I would say wasn't a good one, you know. But the energy was there, and it was something that Catholicism was severely lacking for me. It was a kind of spiritual connection that I didn't receive when I was involved in a Catholic space, because I respond to energetic connection. You know, we were there for each other. We were having fun together. It was a group activity. I was getting to know the people around me. The Catholic space that I was in was kind of exclusive and exclusionary, and we wouldn't really talk to anyone else. It was go there, pray, go home, contemplate. But baptism, it offered a lot of opportunity for community, and we took that, and I dove into it, and after a couple years of being there, I was getting more and more open and more friendly, and I started to talk to these strangers of the church that I went to more to try to engage with people. And I remember this conversation with this woman I had during the passion play that we were doing. She was waiting in line, and I was just bopping around and saying hello to people. And we were chatting, and we were talking about Christ, and we were talking about our experiences, and then we were talking about hell. I don't know how it came up. It's just something I like to talk about. And I'll blame that on the Catholicism. I loved talking about hell, and so do Catholics. Then I was like, then we got into talking about who does and doesn't go to hell. And then I was like, well, I don't think people go to hell just because they're not Christian or whatever, you know. And I was like, my best friend's Jewish, but she couldn't go to hell. Like, she's a good person, you know. And then she said, oh, no. Your friend is going to hell. And I was like, whoa. And then I tried to reconfirm this with other people, and I kind of kept getting the same response. A couple of people were, of course, like, no, God is forgiving, God is joyful, like, you know. But the overwhelming majority of the responses I got, especially from unfortunately older women who I tend to look up to the most, was, they're going to hell. Like, if you don't believe this, you're going to hell. And then it hit me, how much do I believe this? You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's sort of where I came from in that. And this was also during a period of time in which I was also practicing divination on the side, you know, like in my little secrecy, that was me with my little playing card deck practicing divination. And I thought to myself, well, I'm steering away from the flock. That's what it felt like. And it was an intensely disruptive emotional period of my life, because I felt so far away and so bad for what I was doing. And when I say bad, I don't mean sad and upset. I meant I felt villainous, you
right.
know? Mm-hmm. And that's something that stuck with me for a very long time. And finding peace with that has been a journey, because I think there are some aspects of some religions that teach us to villainize parts of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I came from, you know, like that part of my life. It was just an experience now of
breaking down the ways in which I've villainized myself for my interests and for what I engage with and for my spiritual practices.
Did you, prior to, like, you know, us, like, did you have friends that had similar spiritual views?
Yeah, over time, I've really started to find people that understand me more. And that was something that really happened. Really, after that point, I started to gather people, but it didn't erase this feeling of villainy. Mm-hmm. So I think of it as going down the right path with the wrong intentions, you know, because I was so convinced that I was evil, regardless of my no longer being Baptist or Catholic.
Right.
That no matter what I did, it was going to be some form of evil. So I met people that I didn't necessarily vibe with at first, that I probably shouldn't have been around at first. And I got into some stuff that I guess I wouldn't have now, but I don't regret it because it was part of my path and I can't blame myself, especially as a child, you know? Mm-hmm. But eventually that's led me to a path of stepping out of feeling villainous for what I do, because it guided me there. It gave me the right path, because I can't say for sure that if I were still Catholic or Baptist, I wouldn't feel villainous just for existing as I am.
Right.
You know?
So how does your family feel now?
My family's fine with it now. And as I talk to them and I talk to them more, they're more and more okay with it. My grandparents are non-practicing. My grandparents never really went to church with us. That's my mom's side. And that was always totally fine, you know. My grandfather's mother was actually a tarot reader, and that's something I found out more recently, and I'm trying to get her deck.
Ooh, snap.
I am trying to build that little bridge with one of my aunts, great aunts, who I don't know, to get that deck. It's okay if I don't. It's just, like, a goal right now. But my mom was more okay with it than I thought she would be, and more into it than I thought she would be, you know. And, of course, my brother, totally fine with it, totally enjoys it, and his boyfriend is wildly into it. We've changed a lot also in that period of time as a family, just because of some of, like, the familial traumas we've gone through, you know. Like, the passing of my father was a big one that had wildly changed the spiritual practice and spiritual viewpoints of our family, and he was, in a way, the moral center of us for the period that he was most cognizant. And I don't think he was necessarily a bad moral center in that way. He was a very kind and caring person, and he was more interested in Catholicism. But also, when we became Baptist, it was to move away from how negative the particular Catholic church we were going to was getting. So they were drawn into baptism for the same reason I was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, that goes without blame to me, because how would they have known?
Right. I mean, I will say that I do love the, and also, like, being in New Orleans and going to New Orleans, mm-hmm. I do love the art, and mm-hmm. and I love some of the stories that surround the Catholicism.
Me too.
And also, I mean, let me tell you, Some of these saints mm-hmm. are whack, and I love them. Mm-hmm. I love obscure saints. Saint Expedite is my boo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that
that resonates.
No, no, that resonates
Saint
with anyone.
Expedite fans
any,
out there?
Any, you know?
That'd be a great band name.
I mean, I have a nativity saint. I love religious, like, reliefs.
No, me too.
And sculptures, and give me a triptych, and I will mm-hmm. hang that up in my house.
Catholic art's just great.
Yeah, like, I love it.
And
but
really, sometimes too sexy Catholics.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I just was saying, like, where's the pictures of Jesus with the shirt?
I
know.
Right?
The crucifix at the Catholic church I went to was so sexy.
Okay, but yeah. Also, like, St. Sebastian with the arrows. He's just like,
he's beautiful.
Yes. I don't know. So, I mean, I totally get that. I mean, for you, Ivy, it's a little, when I hear you, it's like, that's scary. And I can see how, mm-hmm. how people who may have had a religious structure or mm-hmm. push or mm-hmm. upbringing, how witchcraft and the occult or divination could be scary to them.
Yeah.
And I will say, like, and maybe this is some insight that you can offer, because you know, I never really know what to say when people say that. You know, I usually say something along the lines of, oh, well, Catholicism has a lot of magic in it, mm-hmm. and it takes a lot from paganism, mm-hmm. so you're not really doing anything wrong. But I would say, like, for someone, I mean, being that you're in that, do you have any advice for people who feel that they are evil for enjoying or being attracted to divination or witchcraft?
It's hard to say. When you're in it, it's a different feeling. I don't know if anyone could have convinced me otherwise while I was in it. I would just want to say to them, if something makes you feel evil for things that you're interested in that are not actions that affect people, they're not actions that hurt people, the problem is the thing that's making you feel evil. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to sit with. I think oftentimes when we are dogmatically invested in something, especially when it's literally the weight of Catholicism was my eternal soul. Everything you do, everything you say, reflects on your eternal damnation, and it is not forgiving, you know, and that eternal damnation is also such an intense and heavy mystery. It's left me with, I would say, some permanent anxiety, you know, even though it's not anything I believe in any longer. The anxiousness that I feel about the idea of eternal damnation has carried with me through literally everything I do.
Whoa.
And it's there and it's present and it's real. And if you feel that, you have been traumatized by your religious practice. And that's something to consider. That's like an abusive relationship. And sometimes you cannot convince your friends to leave an abusive relationship.
Especially if it's someone sexy like Jesus or the depictions of Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know? Yeah. I don't know. That'd be hard. But I mean, I think that's pretty, you know, good advice.
Yeah.
I think, and I think it is something to look at. The other thing that I will say too, for me, it's like, well, first of all, so like, okay, what would you have thought of me had you met me in your Catholic days
the
or in your?
Is, I would have thought you were so cool.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Would you have been like secretly like, but he's gonna burn in hell?
No, because I didn't think that about people.
Okay,
I thought it about myself.
Whoa.
Like I didn't want to like, and that's not for all Catholics. Some of them are very judgmental about other people, you mm-hmm. know. Mm-hmm. And I'm not gonna say there weren't some people I judged, you know. But the way in which I judged people was normally, what am I nervous about inside of myself, you know? But when I saw someone, like, who was, like, okay, my first gay pride, like, the first gay pride I ever saw was on my 10th birthday, because I wanted to go to Legoland, and they were having gay pride in San Diego at the time, and I got so excited because I did also think that some of them were clowns. and I really, really like clowns. And then
wow. See, I'm terrified of clowns, so I probably would have been so scared.
My mom explained to me what was going on, and I didn't think to myself, oh, that's bad for them, you know? Mm-hmm. And then when I saw people practicing religions that I didn't understand, like, I would go to temple with my friend, you know? Like, I would still go to metaphysical shops with my aunt. And it never hit me that these people are bad, like, these people are going to hell. I thought to myself, like, these people are doing what they're doing. Like, I don't even remember the thought process, but the feeling to me was, this is their heaven. You know, mm-hmm. like, and I am in the process of trying to find my own, even though it was with a rigid set of rules. And it didn't occur to me that those rules that I was applying to myself were also rules that were being applied to other people without their consent.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Until later on.
Wow. I would say, like, the beauty that I find in witchcraft, or at least in my practices, mm-hmm. is that liberation.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it's almost like when you were saying that you like the Baptist church because of the energy and mm-hmm. stuff, that's how I feel like in a coven. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. when we yeah. do our...
Yeah.
Like, and you've been here, Ivy, where we like burn the petitions.
I love burning petitions with you guys.
There's something about that yeah. that is like... That's energetic, and it's energetically charged. Like,
yes.
There's I don't know, an activity there.
Yes.
Yeah. Group connection really does build this intense spiritual feeling. You know, when you go in with the mindset of we are doing this together for part of our spiritual practice, it creates the... If everyone's invested in it, one of the most wonderful environments conducive to practice and for some people healing and for some people inspiration, it opens gates, it opens mm-hmm. pathways. It's part of the communal experience that I think as animals we need. And it's so beyond that. It's the magical connection to our natural selves that we can gain only through being by other people.
And you're with a group of people mm-hmm. that are basically, to say it simple, you're ride or die.
Yeah.
I mean, it's,
yeah.
You can be at your most vulnerable with your coven mm-hmm. mates. You can rely on them for anything. And so those mm-hmm. are, that in a sense becomes your family,
right.
which you may or may not have.
Yeah.
And I think that is really important, especially for people that may feel alone or ostracized because mm-hmm. of what they practice, is to find a group of people, mm-hmm. maybe in a coven, maybe not, but just
yeah,
finding
maybe just friends
and finding mm-hmm. that community so you can feel supported and included and right. Valued.
Yes. And I would also say too, like, you know, one, you don't have to join a coven, but when you do find community or when you look at things, it's also important to know, it's like, if they ever have rules that, and we mm-hmm. kind of just came across this with two people who came into our shop.
Yes.
If they ever give you rules that are, go against your code of ethics mm-hmm. or require things like nudity or doing things outside of your comfort zone, or they have rules that verge on segregation or mm-hmm. racism or things like that, or transphobic, that is not witchcraft, and that is not a practice, or that does not reflect the entirety mm-hmm. of this spiritual realm. So I would say with that, like, walk away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's back to that group idea of if you can't say no, you gotta go.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. it's important. Your consent is first and foremost the thing that matters going into every situation. I'm always in awe of people who form those group connections where they find that comfort space, you know. I think it's amazing. I think so often what's pushed me away, what's made me hesitate in joining a coven, especially as I was younger, was when I was chatting with people, when I was in these online spaces trying to find my niche, there was so much of this intense predatory behavior, especially directed at a young woman, you know, where there was rules about nudity, there were rules about sex. And also, I'm going to put this out there. When I was looking for a coven, this was after that whole, like, I'm not Christian anymore moment, like, directly after. So I was 15.
Whoa.
And people were talking to me online about, knowing I was 15, who had, like, or said they had these groups, telling me about, like, sexual activity in their coven groups and how it was mandatory for them. And if I wanted to be part of it, I had to do this, this, and this. And luckily, I was such an anxious person that I still thought I was going to hell, so I wouldn't send anyone nudes. So I got through that with my wow. my anxiety.
Thank you, anxiety,
for kind of saving my my ass in those regards. But it was such a hesitation.
Your 14-year-old ass.
Right, exactly. So so seeing you guys in your coven has given me a lot of it's reestablished hope for those
connected. Are you saying you want to join?
I don't.
Oh, wow. Whoa. Thank you. I just got sorry to turned down on...
It's given me a lot of hope for organized practice spaces, whereas before I was in that space of I hate organized religion and like that kind of thing. When in reality, now I understand the purpose that it serves for community and space building, and I have a lot more respect for it than I used to. Although my personal time and my personal practice, I have really thrived being more alone in it and being able to communicate with other people, but do kind of what I do by myself.
Yes.
Do you think, because you said that, do you think as somebody that may be new and maybe entering witchcraft or whatever path, like an esoteric path, do you think they should practice alone first and find their footing?
Absolutely.
And you kind of, you know, be comfortable with who they are before joining a coven?
I think it depends on the person. We all want to be comfortable with who we are, but at the end of the day, that's not everyone's constant. You know, everyone's going to go through waves of being comfortable with themselves and not. I think it's important for people who have been part of abusive organized religions to take time for themselves, because the need for community that we can have is codependent. And it's unfortunate that that's instilled into us. It's unfortunate that we put so much onto what other people think, say, and do that, sometimes it makes it harder to focus on what we need. So I would recommend if you're getting out of a large organized religion that required a lot of you and required a lot of your deepest, most upset emotions, it's time to really offer space for just yourself and to really define your own personal practice. And if in the future you decide, I want to be part of something again, go for it. But people who are in that do need their own time afterwards. But people who are just getting into it, just finding their way in the world, if you haven't gone through that kind of experience and you really want to get into a coven, I don't think you need to stop yourself. As long as you have an idea of how you handle group spaces, you're probably going to be okay.
Yes, but I would also say too, I think you should have some, at least for me, like the group space, I think, you know, that can happen whenever, but what I often see is that when people go in, they're like, I like witchcraft, I want to join a coven, but then do not know the fundamentals of witchcraft.
Okay.
Aren't willing to do the work, or think that they're going to learn everything through their coven. Because here's what ends up happening. It's like two things can happen. Mm-hmm. It's like, one, you will think this is the right or like this is the ultimate way. Mm-hmm. And you may find yourself in a situation that you're uncomfortable with. Say that it goes bad. Well, then you dismiss the practice altogether because of that experience. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you read and you study and you're like, okay, this is the history of witchcraft. This is what witchcraft is. Mm-hmm. This is what this coven pertains to. You will kind of have one, your own kind of spiritual, I think, structure, as well as it won't be so new and out of the blue, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I absolutely see what you mean there. It is important to study what you're getting into.
Let's talk about also maybe people that want to do it for the wrong reasons.
Right.
Because it's aesthetically cool.
Cool or aesthetically pleasing.
People can say that they're in a coven.
Yes. And I think that is something that happens a lot, which goes to the next thing that I should say, or this can be our end send off, is that first of all, for that, it's like, you know, it is not mandatory for people to join a coven if they are interested in witchcraft. Actually, a lot of predominantly Wiccans are in covens, you know? Mm. So that is something too. I mean, you have traditional witchcraft covens. There are other covens. But usually the structure, what we know, how we perceive things is predominantly a Wiccan aspect that requires initiation, because Wicca is a religion. Mm. For witchcraft, I mean, you can practice it solitary. The majority of people that I know, like, they'll practice solitary and they'll get together. But if you're going to go into that, covens require structure.
Yes.
You know?
Commitment.
Commitment. You also have to be spiritually, or you have to be involved.
And right. available for and other available. People.
And available.
For your coven mates. And there's no yeah. room for complacency. If people need your help, you have to be able to make time.
Precisely.
Right. Time for the practice, time for the coven, and time for your coven mates.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it's like, I would say for the most part, and I guess this is kind of how we'll end, is resources. Like, what were resources that assisted you mm-hmm. in the beginning journey of your path? And I will say for me, reading. I mean, mm-hmm. books are, and one of the books that I always recommend is Judica Isles' Encyclopedia of Witchcraft. I mean, that is just a good mm-hmm. fundamental book to give you different aspects of the path, different aspects of the craft, gives you kind of an idea of what it is. And then maybe find that shop, find that metaphysical shop. Also know, you know, you have to preface it, not everyone who works there is going to identify as a witch.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know? So that's just kind of where I go. Stay away from Google and Tumblr. Okay, that is going to be the worst.
And now or TikTok.
Yeah.
You know? Unless it's the Old World Emporiums.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And get a lot of books too. Dylan's yeah. recommendation, that's what was recommended to me. Mm-hmm. That's what I started with. I think it's a wonderful jumping off point for everybody because it has so much information. Even if you're practicing for how long? 20 years.
Yeah.
That book is going to be on yeah. your shelf as a reference mm-hmm. forever. And
how did you kind of get, were there other things that assisted you?
There was a local store where you were teaching classes.
Yeah.
So that's where I found, I think finding those classes, finding those resources, it does take work. It takes yeah. research. You know, you can start at Barnes & Noble. You can yeah. start at a, mm-hmm. a metaphysical store. But do that research. Mm-hmm. Take the time to really educate yourself and find classes. It could be on Meetup. It could be at a metaphysical shop. It could be, you know, at a open, like a book signing or something yeah. like that. So just be open and be willing to ask questions and do the work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I would say, so I think before we send off, one, we are going to, we have a few upcoming classes. So I'm just going to say that.
Oh, yeah.
We have part two of my, I don't even know if this is going to premiere. So I'm just going to say it. Part two of my herbology or apothecary class, right. Witch's Guide to Apothecary. That is tomorrow mm-hmm. At 7 p.m. So tomorrow, Saturday, the 30th.
The
20-30th. The 30th. We also have a Lupercalia class, mm-hmm. Which goes in depth into the root history and roots and practices of Lupercalia, as well as the history of Valentine's Day, how that started. We're going to talk about love magic. We're going to talk about all that. And that is Saturday, February 13th at 7:30 p.m. Pacific mm-hmm. Standard Time. And I'm going to throw one out there. Ivy, if you can just pick a card deck over there, you're going to hear some rustling real quick. Ivy is picking a tarot deck, and what we're going to do is we are just going to pull a card to end the session,
yeah, mm-hmm.
our recording, and I guess since we are going to be recording on Friday, this will be your card of the week.
Yeah.
Card of the week to kind of look at, and boom. Ooh, I love this. Look at that. The Fool. This was our podcast. You know, The Fool.
That's so
this
funny.
Is our journey. Oh my God, you should. You should take a picture like right next to, look at that. That's pretty bomb. And here we go. So The Fool is new beginnings, opportunities, taking a leap of faith. Mm-hmm. It is zero, okay? Mm-hmm. It's beginning, it's end. It can appear anywhere in the tarot deck. So I would say during this week, listen to our podcast, okay? It's new. We are taking the risk. We are putting it out there. And also I think for you, try something new. Step outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you any right?
No, I think the card really epitomizes.
Right. That, I'm just excited about it being the yeah. Fool.
I think that's amazing.
I'm sort of riding high on that right now.
Me yeah. Too. Oh my God, that should be the title of the episode, The Fool.
And never stop living the fool's life.
Yes, so. Absolutely. Yeah, have absolutely have yeah. Fun. So once again, I am Miss Sick Dylan.
I'm Brianne.
And I'm Ivy.
And thank you so much for joining us at the Old World Emporium. You can follow our Instagram, mm-hmm. The Old World Emporium. Emporium, old with an E, O-L-D-E, mm-hmm. Sorry.
Oldie.
I had a moment. And stay tuned for updates, and we'll see you next Friday.
You want to plug your own Instagram?
Oh, Mystic Dylan Official. Mm-hmm. You can plug mine. You want to plug yours?
You don't McBizzleby. McBizzleby.
And what about yours?
And mine is Neat Sword, not Meat Sword.
Awesome.
But can you make a meat sword?
You can make okay. A meat sword. Let's get started.
There we go. We're going to go make meat swords. Have a magical day, y'all.
Bye.
Bye.